Okay. Inray Sparks out of the Northern District of Texas. Basically, the background of this case is that the debtor previously sold his exempt homestead for $347,000. And shortly thereafter was seeking approval of two separate purchases. One was purchase of real property that had a value of $180,000, but the debtor sought to give himself a $10,000 discount for acting as the broker. And then the other thing that he was seeking to purchase was real property, which amounts to about $78,000. The creditor in this case objected to both purchases. First, because the debtor wasn't acting in an arm's length transaction with giving himself a $10,000 discount. And then in regards to the personal property, under the Texas homestead exemption, any exempt funds from the sale of the homestead 6 months later would become property of the estate. So the court, in dealing with the real property purchase, said that they would approve the sale, but only for $180,000. The creditor actually proposed that the debtor shouldn't be involved at all, and that should be sold on the open market. The court overturned that, but did approve for $180,000, adding on the $10,000 the debtor sought to take off. But then for the personal property, the court found that this was not an interest to the estate, and that even though they proffered that the value was $78,000, there just wasn't a sufficient showing that it would have been to the benefit of the estate.
And what's interesting about this particular case is what the court looked at is what the debtor did is like, okay, well, there's no realtor involved, so, you know, I'm going to take that commission for myself, the $10,000 essentially, right? Mm-hmm. And the court said, no, you're acting as a fiduciary, and so that benefit needs to go to the general unsecured creditors.
Yep.
All right, and you can see on our slides the page number of the materials that it's on. That one's on page 61. The next case is a district court case, Bywaters versus, I can't even pronounce the name, I'm just gonna call it Bywaters. So in this particular case, it's appeal from the bankruptcy court. I think this is one of Judge Rhodes' cases. And what happened in this particular case was the Bywater filed a motion to extend time to object to discharge and bring an action determining the claim is not dischargeable in the bankruptcy court. One day before the deadline to object to discharge, Bywater moved to extend that time by 90 days. And Bywater argued to the bankruptcy court that, look, I've been stymied in my discovery because, you know, we had a 341 meeting. I interviewed the debtor at the 341 meeting. And then the trustee had to continue it to a further date, so I wasn't able to complete my questioning of the debtor, and so I wasn't able to really do any discovery. So now I'm filing this motion to extend the time to extend discovery by 90 days. Well, the bankruptcy court denied that extension, and this was really kind of a death penalty because they couldn't conduct any discovery and couldn't file the complaint to dischargeability. And what the bankruptcy court looked at was, okay, well, tell me what you did prior to the deadline. What kind of discovery did you conduct? And Bywater said, well, all I did was I interviewed the debtor at the 341 meeting, and one day before the deadline expired, I did send a request under 2004 to depose the debtor, but I haven't deposed him. And court said, well, what else have you done? Well, I haven't done anything else. And so the court said, that's not enough. I mean, you can't just sit on your hands and expect me to extend the deadline one day before the deadline had expired and give you that opportunity. The district court affirmed. So the district court said, look, I agree with the bankruptcy court. You know, you have to act with due diligence in this case. We're talking about your Bywaters case, Brenda. No, you got it right. All right.
This next case is in Ray Stanke. I hope I said that right. And in this case, the debtors had proposed a 60-month plan that after modification was to pay the unsecured creditors at 15%. However, during the course of the bankruptcy, the husband debtor's grandfather and mother both died, leaving him an interest in their properties. And if he were to liquidate the properties, take the money, him and his wife could pay off their unsecured creditors 100%. And so when they were planning to seek discharge, the trustee said, I'm going to object to the discharge unless we modify your plan to pay out 100%. And the debtors had absolutely no problem with this. They agreed. They wanted to pay their unsecured creditors 100%, and they also wanted to use the money to pay off their student loans, which they had a significant amount of student loans here. And so the trustee files the motion to modify the plan, files the plan modification, and there are no objections. Excuse me. Of course, the unsecured creditors aren't going to object because they're going to get more money, and debtors were on board with this. However, the court said, wait a second. Just because there's no objection here doesn't mean that I don't have to ensure compliance with the code. I still have to look at Section 1329A and see whether or not this complies. The issue here was that debtors had made their final plan payment, paid their plan base, in October of 2021.